Hello there, you're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Monday the 27th of November. Today I'm joined by Marta Denieva, who is a Watson's Daily Ambassador. Hey there Marta, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, how are you?
Yep, all very good, thank you. So which story would you like to talk about from today's Watson's Daily?
So today, I would like to talk about India deciding to triple its coal production from underground mines by 2028.
Oh, naughty, naughty.
Yes. in my opinion, it's an absolute mockery to the COP summit in 2021 when the country signed the agreement to phase down coal, even though underground mining is considered more environmentally friendly compared to open cast mining. And currently, open cast mining accounts for more than 95% of India's coal output. And just as a reminder, the original COP agreement in 2021 said phase out. But at the last minute, it was because of China and India that it was turned to phase down. Now, India does indeed need more energy, as there's a huge rise in power demand, and it also imports a lot of coal to try and keep up with that demand. So the government is trying to reduce coal imports by producing more domestically. But there's a reason why it's becoming harder and harder to get investors on board for boosting the coal industry in India. And surely this must be a signal that the country will find more money and investors should they decide to focus on renewables and batteries. Now, what's upsetting is that there seems to be minimal effort on India's side to actually align itself with the COP agreement it has signed. I mean, about three quarters of the country's power production comes from coal. And despite underground coal mining being more expensive and risky, the Indian government continues to pour money into it instead of actively working towards alternatives. India is the world's most populous country and the fastest growing large economy. And yet, they say that rich nations should stop polluting sooner because India currently can't afford to do so. And while I understand the concept of putting pressure on poorer countries to move to renewables while rich nations are dragging their feet is a problem that should be tackled, I don't think there's space for India in that discourse. With India growing so rapidly, the stopping of polluting by richer nations will not be able to offset the impact of older coal consumption in India, which is set to significantly increase in the future. And India keeps using the argument that its per capita coal emissions are lower than a lot of other countries. But let's not forget that it has a population of more than 1 billion people. And while it's true that historically India has been a low emitter of carbon emissions compared to the West, this is not supposed to become a game of, can we now produce more emissions than the West? And over the past 50 years, effects from climate change have triggered more than 700 heat waves in the country, driving up electricity demand as people purchase more air conditioners. According to the International Energy Agency, electricity consumption from air conditioners increased by 21% between 2019 and 2022. And nearly 10% of the country's electricity demand comes from space cooling, which is set to increase ninefold by 2050. Surely it's obvious that this is now becoming a doomed circle of energy production through fossil fuels triggering climate change, which then triggers a demand for more energy, which leads to producing more energy, leading to worse climate change. Anyway, I'm really curious what the reaction will be during this year's COP summit. What do you think, Peter?
you make some excellent points there. I do think that, you know, firstly, I do think it was quite ironic that I think it was there was one of the ministers in the original article that said that, you know, said that actually this mining is more eco-friendly than I think open cast mining. And you're thinking, you know, that's not really that's not really a particularly great argument, because you're still digging stuff out of the ground and harming the planet. So you can't really, I don't think you can really justifiably say something like that. I think that this is clearly a major problem, because India needs power. It does have a big population. It is a growing economy. And the growing economies always, you know, always need power. However, like you said, you know, you can't just keep blaming this on everyone else. Although I would admit, you know, China and the US are, I think, the world's biggest polluters. Yeah. So really, yes, you know, they need to do more than everyone else. But that's not to say, as again, as you said, that you just think, oh, well, I'll give up and we'll just let the big countries do it, and that should be enough. You know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, India is already a major economic power, and it is in the growth phase, and you can think that maybe this is the perfect time for them to invest in renewables. But I think along with that, though, one needs to be able to see a bigger or faster progression with regards to the power storage. So it's great that there are, you know, solar panels and offshore, onshore wind power, hydropower, all that kind of, it's great. But the problem is that if you can't hang on to that power, what it means is you end up having very volatile power supply. So, you know, going back a few years, you know, before, I mean, we're mostly blaming the shift in terms of energy consumption and power generation going back to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, because prior to that, a lot of countries, particularly Germany, was getting a lot of gas from Russia, and they weren't being energy independent. They weren't independent in terms of energy purposes. But actually, it was before that. We still see before that that, you know, fossil fuels, prices and things were rising, because although there's more renewable sources out there than there were before, and they're always growing. The problem is the volatility, you know, because in the months leading up to you know, the Ukraine war, there wasn't that much rain in Europe, there wasn't much wind, and it meant all of that renewable power sources were kind of, well, not useless, but they were providing much less power than was needed. But then we got into the war, and then everyone needed to have power now. And so that's when you saw the dusting off of, you know, coal-fired power stations, which were either closing down or had closed down. So that, you know, there was more use of that. And then suddenly this is when we got much more interest in nuclear power. You know, so and remember that, you know, France, Macron, when Macron first got into power, he was saying that he wanted to reduce France's use of nuclear power. But that completely reversed. And so they were in a bit of a state because they were trying to run it down. They hadn't spent much on maintenance. But now that they needed it, the maintenance got really expensive, and it meant that there was a show. I mean, it was very difficult. So moving back to it, I think in this particular case, I think that, India needs, you know, it does need to look at more renewable sources as it's growing, because then it doesn't have to sort of go back and do it. You can do it as it's growing. But it's easy for me to say. Obviously difficult to do, but I think that you know, it is a shocker, because of course they did sign up, as everyone else did, to these commitments, and to sort of go back on them so soon is not good. But do you have any further thoughts on that?
No, no, I completely agree. It is a very complex issue. And I think it's also the fact that initially it was supposed to be a complete phase out. And then it was because of India and China that it was decreased to a phase down.
Yeah.
And even that is being kind of ignored is upsetting.
Mm.
But yeah.
No, agreed. So there we go. So yes, I mean, this is a very interesting subject that will run, you know, will continue to run. So I'm going to talk about perhaps the reason why, anyone who reads Watson's Daily will know that I am always making fun of economists. And in today's story, there is something about, so there was a report out from the House of Lords or a special Lords committee, and they were actually looking into why the Bank of England's economic forecasts were so bad. So the forecasts have been pretty rubbish in terms of predicting the increase in inflation, and that was, you know, that has been particularly bad. In defense of the Bank of England, it wasn't just them that got it wrong. They got it wrong, the ECB got it wrong, the Fed got it wrong. They were all basically saying the same thing. So when prices were going up, they kept on saying, oh, well, it's, you know, this is just transitory, don't worry, short term, we don't want to raise interest rates too soon. And I remember on this podcast, you know, especially I remember with Duncan, you know, we were talking about how we think, you know, interest rates have to be put up now. They have to be put up now. But, you know, the governor of the Bank of England, Andrew Bailey, is saying, well, you know, no, it's all transitory. Don't worry about it. It's fine. But then later on that year, they had to. And then I think they followed, or around the same time, to the US, and then much later, the ECB actually decided, yes, in fact, this is a problem, and they acted accordingly. So, you know, they all got it wrong. It does show why experts, in particular economists, you know, should not be relied on in terms. Now, I don't think they're lovely people. I've worked with loads of them. They're lovely people. Some of them are rich. Some of them are brilliant. Some of them are very good. But, you know, they can't get things right all the time. Now, the problem is that I suppose if you don't, you're not in the industry, you don't work with them, don't see what they do on a day-to-day business, it's kind of galling, because you think, well, hold on a minute, your job, it's in the name, you're an economist, you tell us what goes on with the economy. You got one job to do and you can't even do that. You know, you're paid loads of money and you can't even do that. Well, the problem is that I personally think that being an economist is probably harder than being an analyst of a sector, because, you know, you've got actual companies, they've got balance sheets and P&Ls you can look at. You've got past performance, all this kind of stuff. You can compare it with the rest of the sector and different sectors. It's a bit more self-contained, whereas to ask the question, which direction is the UK economy going? It's a very big question that requires huge amounts of data to crunch in order to try to ascertain an answer. So all I'm saying is that they're not, it's not like economists are stupid, because they're not. And it's just that they're trying to do a very difficult job. It is very hard. And that, you know, I think the best thing to do is to take into consideration what they say, but you can't base your, I don't know, business case or your strategy entirely on what an economist says, because they're probably going to be wrong. So, you know, you need to take into account all sorts of, what the economist says, the trends in the market. Other things you're hearing in the market, you need to take them all together and then base your kind of projections on that. But what do you think?
Well, My main issue is that I can't really remember the last time the Bank of England actually got it right. And I've been hearing more and more people talk about how they're losing their trust in the institution and they don't know what to do, which even transfers to a general lack of trust in banks. And at this point, I just feel like they're doing tarot card readings, and I completely understand why people are getting more and more frustrated. And I just wonder, when will actions be taken to try and gain back people's trust?
I mean, I think, yeah, you make some, again, good points there. I mean, so at the moment, so the Lords have done this, you know, this report. Then they've got Ben Bernanke, who was, so he was the Fed chief before the last but one, I think it was, of the chief of the Fed. So he's a big hitter. He's been brought in. Presumably, he's going to have to make some kinds of recommendations to justify the massive fee that he's no doubt asked for. But I think, you know, I think cynically, nothing really that much is going to change, because the thing is that, you know, the Bank of England is the Bank of England. They don't take on stupid people to do jobs like this. So it's not as if you can turn around and say, right, everyone's stupid, off you go, we're going to get some intelligent people in and they're going to do it. It's not like that. They are intelligent. So I kind of wonder that whether what they're going to do, because they need to look like they're doing something. They can't just turn over and say, well, you know, yeah, okay, fair enough, but we'll just carry on what we're doing. So maybe there might have to be a bit of a reshuffle. I personally would think that actually you could get rid of the governor of the Bank of England, because he has not been very good. He has alienated the market. He's not really done, I don't think he's done a great job. I mean, and you know, you could, if they got rid of him, you could, it would be like you are starting afresh, and you know, they'll be a bit more willing to believe in whoever it may be that replaces him. So so that's what I would say. I mean, I think that you know, Ben Bernanke, he's got to, what he says and this, the result of this report, is going to have to do, surely it's going to have to do something, and if it's going to do something, it needs to look good as well. And I think that getting rid of Andrew Bailey would be a great idea, because to be honest, if he was in any other job, he would have been sacked by now, because he's done such a bad job. So I don't know who can sack him, but you know, I think that would be a good thing to do. But sorry, Andrew, if you're listening, which you won't be, but hey, you know, he might be recommended. This podcast might be recommended to him on his, you know, as he's driving home or something. So apologies, nothing personal, but you got it wrong all the time. So I think it's time to move aside, bucko, and get someone else in. But anyway, that's just my humble opinion. But anyway, is there anything else you'd like to say on this at all?
No, I think you covered it pretty well. I guess now we just have to wait and see what will happen.
Yes, we'll see. So anyway, thank you very much indeed, Marta. It's you know, it's good to hear your thoughts on all this. And yeah, you know, thank you very much for listening, and we'll be back again tomorrow. So many thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.